Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Well, what Angel Hernandez is doing behind home plate. Just increasingly worse and worse and worse and more infuriating with each passing day.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
It's a witch's brew of incompetence and arrogance.
Today's guests, co-host of Good Morning Football, Peter Schrager, writer and comedian, Neil Brennan, plus your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now... it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two, the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Howard Beck of The Ringer is going to join us to talk all things basketball. The NBA playoffs begin essentially tonight. The play-in tournament games go down this evening in the Western Conference. And then you've got the Warriors and the Kings playing tonight on TBS. And then the Los Angeles Lakers take on the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans. That is a compelling double dip tonight. Obviously, the loser of Kings Warriors is out. The winner moves on to take on the loser of the Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans for the right to be the 8 seed. The winner of Pelicans Lakers moves on to take on the Denver Nuggets. And you counsel tonight, Christopher, you think the Lakers should just rest their stars,
yeah,
and take on the winner of the Timberwolves and the the Warriors and the Kings just to try and see who could take on the Thunder. Gotcha.
Smart.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton.
It's not smart, though.
And then, of course, let's just say LeBron goes triple-double tonight. Let's say Zion is one of the biggest games of his career. Let's say Curry goes for 50, or let's say another Sabonis triple-double, right? Or De'Aaron Fox scores 45 or 50, right? Let's say something big like that happens. The statistics go in nowhere. It's just I think you know what it does? It goes in the Phantom Zone from Superman 2, General Zod. It just goes flying,
flying through the nether regions of our galaxy
until some sort of nuclear event gets flown through the roof of the Eiffel Tower by Superman, thrown into space, and then all sudden, holy heck, break loose and records start falling from the sky.
Maybe that's what it is. Warren's 50 piece from the bubble, you know, didn't really.
Jason Tatum had 50 in one of these games, right?
Did he?
I don't know. I don't understand the concept of the stats. Don't matter, but the games do matter because the loser of tonight's Warriors Kings game is done. For the year. They're finished. And then the loser of the games between tonight's winner and 9-10 and the loser of 7-8, they're done. I mean, we got elimination games. That's the point, right?
That's why I don't think the Lakers should take the night off. Because now you really, if you lose today now on purpose, this is one game.
You're playing with fire.
I don't think they have to try to lose on purpose tonight. They're just going to lose.
Anthony Davis back in New Orleans. Do you think the Pelicans are a better team?
I think
team?
The Pels are just better. Yeah.
Okay, we'll find out.
Even when you lose, I win.
The Lakers have played better more often than not, over the last, what would you say, since the All-Star break. They've had some nice stretches.
Yeah. I'm just glad LeBron, who once said this was the worst idea in the history of the NBA, is now playing in his third straight year,
right?
So congrats to him.
Well, they would, or they'd be the 8 seed. They'd just be moving on to take on Oklahoma City. So this gives the Warriors and Kings new life.
Yeah.
You know? Well, at any rate, we'll talk about that with Howard Beck. Also, the WNBA draft. Listen, they've had next for a while, right? But it just seemed like they've got now, right? They've got now for the first time, and that's no disrespect to people who have come out of college, out of women's college basketball as it ascends. And there's been, I mean, Stacey Dale said that when she came on the program to talk about the national championship game between South Carolina and Iowa coming off of the women's Final Four. That was one of the highest rated games in the history of the sport between Iowa and UConn. And she basically, you know, they've had star players and terrific players, and there still are terrific players, and there's been an incredible amount of momentum that's been built ever since they started the WNBA, and they came up with that phrase of, we've got next. It does appear that they've got now. Caitlin Clark coming off of Saturday Night Live, coming off of all of these highly rated games, and she, with her stardom, helped raise a ton of other boats. And apparently, according to all metrics from Fanatics, her jersey in 2 hours became the most sold jersey. Her Indiana Fever jersey became the most sold jersey on a draft night ever in any sport, beating Trevor Lawrence's 2021 draft night of the number of people that bought his jersey as a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Wow.
And then we were talking before, hey, man, Chicago gets Camila Cardozo and April Reese in the same draft.
Angel Reese
in the same draft. And these are two people who have a history against one another. And now suddenly they're teammates.
Right.
That's a problem.
And so
all
now
squash. For everybody else,
you know,
all squash now.
And so now we're talking about history between a couple of players who hated each other or seemed to go against each other, stood in each other's way. And now here they are as teammates.
Sparks had a good draft too, getting Cam Brink and Rickea Jackson out of Tennessee. I mean, yeah, it was. I fully tuned in last night to this draft.
You did,
yeah.
Right. And I think many people are plugged in. May 14th is when the Connecticut Suns take on the Indiana Fever. That is going to be Caitlin Clark's first WNBA game. And attention will be paid because attention is deserved. Because we've seen some battles in women's college basketball, and some cases literal. And now we get to see him at the next level, and we get to see who else has been there at the next level with a spotlight thrown on it that hadn't been there before, quite frankly. And the spotlight also includes the amount of money they're getting paid, the WNBA players. Because I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the four-year contract that Caitlin Clark is inking, her fourth year, tops out in the mid-80,000s.
Yeah, I think.
And so it's just like, well, wait a minute. What's up with that?
And this is how it's always been.
That's why Brittany Griner was playing in Russia and wound up in a jail because she was playing wrong place, wrong time.
Had to go over there to make some money.
Right.
You know, these girls, women are averaging about $75,000. I think over like a 4 or 5 years, Caitlin Clark's sum is going to be $336,000.
And that's why her off the court money is what's going to just fill her bank account
as
she deserves.
By the league, yeah.
Right. Now I need to, I guess, add more meat. I yada 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 a lot by saying, you know, Brittany Griner wasn't paid a lot. Yada yada yada. She winds up in jail, so in a Russian prison. I'm just pointing out that perhaps if the funds were here, domestically,
a lot of these women
as
do
a
go
salary,
overseas.
You don't have to go overseas.
The greats go overseas because that's where the money is for women's basketball. Yeah. And, you know, we've seen the eyeballs, we've seen the ratings, we've seen how much dollars all these women have made in college. Now, will the eyeballs now move to the WNBA and follow them to their new teams?
Well, they will in our household, I know that.
Which maybe will rise the boats of the salaries here across, you know, ratings generate dollars. Yeah. Ticket sales generates more dollars, which gets filtered down to the players. So let's hope that that does continue.
Indeed. Hey. Blake Griffin retired.
Yeah, man.
What's your two cents on that one?
Let me tell you. I was a huge Blake Griffin fan. Mm-hmm. Still am. That guy brought me so much joy as a Clippers fan. Like, when he got drafted, I was actually there. I think it was June 25th, 2012. It was the day Michael Jackson died, as a matter of fact. I was in the building, in the garden, to watch Blake Griffin get drafted, as you can see.
Hey, look at that photograph.
I had a Sam Cassell jersey that I was in the cab.
Sam Cassell.
And I took some tape and I covered up Cassell in the 9 and his 19 and wrote Griffin on there. And by the way, that was also when Steph Curry got drafted too, just a little friendly reminder. But yeah, the second he got in, you know, he missed his rookie year. He hurt his knee. So we had to wait an extra year for Blake to play. But hey, DeAndre Jordan and then Chris Paul coming to create Lob City. I mean, obviously, we didn't win any championships, but it was so much fun. It was so exciting. And he really brought eyes to the Clippers. And man, it was a great time back then to just watch him. His athleticism was just unbelievable. And, you know, a human highlight reel.
Yes, jumping over a Kia in a slam dunk contest notwithstanding.
And by the way, I wouldn't even put that in the top 30 Blake Griffin dunks.
No,
jumping over a car doesn't even...
We were talking about it. Blake, remember, sat out his quote-unquote rookie year.
Yeah, like he got hurt, yeah.
And then his first game I was at the Clippers, he had four dunks that were just like, who is this guy? This is so fun to watch.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what his Clipper... you know, career was dunk after highlight dunk, and they were a fun team. They won playoff games, and then he just kind of gets unceremoniously shipped out to Detroit, and it's, you know, it's kind of a major bummer how the second half of his career went.
Yeah, I mean, he played pretty well for the Pistons. I can remember specifically watching that first game, and I was bummed, man.
Yeah.
You know, it was a contractual thing. They paid him a lot of money, and then they let him go as almost a restart. But watching him play for the Pistons was hard, Rich. It really was, because like I said, he was so well-loved here, brought so much joy, and it was awesome. He was a 20-9, 20-10 guy. Just, man, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a great era.
Yeah, I mean, for it kind of... what, put the Clippers on a map in this town in a way that they desperately needed it.
Absolutely.
And had not really had.
Obviously, right? Always a Lakers town, a Lakers building.
And a sense of humor that kind of fit this town.
A funny guy
as well,
you know, and he's done well on his off-court endeavors.
Right.
You know, doing stand-up, producing movies and TV shows. But on the court, man, the man was a beast. And I think very underrated for some reason.
Was he part of the crew that snuck towards Cuban's house when they had DeAndre Jordan in their clutches or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, the emoji crew?
Matter of fact, Blake was the one he tweeted out. He put a chair in front of DJ's door.
Right.
To be like knowing. So he stuck the chair up under the door. So
to keep him from going.
Yeah.
From leaving free agency.
Those two were best friends. So he definitely didn't want him to leave at that time.
What a time here, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of put the Clippers back on the map.
No,
right?
There's PJ, no question.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt about it.
And then, you know, the injuries, you know, kind of took away his athleticism in the end of his career. But for the first, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, Blake Griffin was.
Yeah, we'll see what he does next.
He was amazing.
Okay. NBA, man. Fantastic. WNBA, it's got now. Will they change their phrase?
Good question.
They haven't gotten that. I'm sure they got rid of "We Got Next" a long time ago, but they've got now.
Yeah,
they really do, man. Because the players,
all eyes are on them.
The players that they are drafting and over and over again and amassing in this league more than ever before have name recognition and name recognition for having game and being badasses. As well.
I mean, all the fits were trending last night on social media. Yeah. Like, it was a fun night.
There was quite a bit. Yeah. And you know, and Caitlin Clark, you know what she did today? She was on Good Morning America. Because ABC and ESPN is all in on this. They are all in on it. But 37 of the Indiana Fever 40 games are going to be nationally televised by some partner of the WNBA.
Yep.
So Caitlin Clark's going to be everywhere. And she already is. So... at any rate, let's take a break. We've got Howard Beck of The Ringer to discuss this and what we're going to see tonight. And by the way, you know, there's a new Team USA that's out as well, missing one guy. Who the hell's Jalen Brunson on that roster?
We should discuss who should be on the team.
Howard Beck coming up from The Ringer, senior NBA writer, next. A lot of you folks who have been listening to this show know about our relationship with Game Time, which is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase because you could see views from your seat. And before you buy your tickets, before you hit that purchase button, you get all in pricing so you know everything that's into the cost of your seat and there's no surprises at all. Now here's something you may not know about Game Time. It's the authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch. Killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seats, and the lowest price guarantee, with Game Time taking the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. So download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account, redeem the code EISEN, you get $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Hey, we're back here on the show.
I was like, what are you doing, Rich? I was going to start talking. I was going to be like,
sorry, I was in my own little world right here. Tufo,
you go. What would your segment be right now?
Yeah, what would your segment be?
The Masters ratings are insane.
Like, I'm down 20%, though.
I know, but it's still like on Thursday.
Great take.
No, but there's still Thursday.
You know whose ratings never go down
20%? That's Tiger. The Tiger element, we talked about this.
Not the same.
It is. When Tiger brought it up when he was playing. If Tiger's
How about this for a hot take? You ready for this hot take? Here's the hot take. How about this? That after, in the long run, we'll find out that playing 54 holes in tournaments that don't have a single ounce of feel of competitive nature on the LIV Tour will eventually cost you in a spot like Augusta National. How does that sound?
I like that. By the way, the LIV guys did pretty bad. Only Patrick Reed
and I know
and
that could
Terrell
be recency.
Or even
Bryson DeChambeau had a decent, you know,
first day.
I know that.
And then meltdown the next three.
But when it, you know, let's see how it all goes now, because I know last year they did really well.
Last year the LIV guys played pretty well,
right?
Yeah.
So let's see how it all goes. How long it lasts for?
I mean.
How long the 54
60-year-old Jose Maria Olazabal beat Brooks Koepka and John Rahm this week?
Didn't John Rahm say that LIV should start playing 72
holes?
He
wants them to go to 72,
right.
Yeah. So he also said he thought him signing with LIV was going to help bring everybody together, and it's done the opposite.
Well, I mean, Rory already said he's playing on the PGA Tour the rest of his career.
Well, because there was a cockamamie report in London.
That, $850 million for the LIV Tour.
And Rory's just like, I don't know where any of that comes from.
All right. Not a bad segment coming out of me not paying attention that we're back on the air and Del Tufo having a terrible take, and saved
it.
No,
not terrible. The Masters
it's a terrible take.
Still did well.
Awful take. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. The stats don't count, but the game do. How's that for a phrase for the play-in tournament?
Hey.
And then the NBA playoffs are kicking off. The WNBA draft last night has a buzz about it that is considerable. To discuss all of this, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, the senior writer of the NBA for The Ringer, Howard Beck. Good to see you, Howard. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rich. Good to see you.
What's the most compelling storyline entering the NBA playoffs in your estimation, sir? What do you have?
Oh, I mean, there are many, many to choose from. Are the Celtics as great as their dominant regular season record, 64 wins? Are the Denver Nuggets capable of repeating given all the parody. And then, of course, there's just the parody thing. Like, there's just a lot of parody. There's a boatload of 50-win teams in the West. You know, everybody all the way down through, I mean, you could even say down through the Warriors at the 10 spot, who are in a play-in game tonight, believe that they probably have a shot at a deep playoff run. And certainly the Lakers, who went from play-in to Western Conference Finals last year, are aiming to repeat that and believe they can. And I think finish strong enough to make the case that they can, but we'll see. They're eighth and will be playing in a play-in game of their own today. So it's just a really interesting field because the Nuggets are the obvious favorite as defending champs and have had a solid enough season that you expect them to be right there. But there's just a lot of teams that can make the case for themselves, right? Timberwolves and Thunder with breakthrough seasons, young teams that we really haven't seen prove themselves. The Clippers are finally healthy-ish, I think, and have the talent to make a deep run. And then just the fact that you've got, teams like this, whether it's the Suns, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Clippers, we have these older stars, Rich, who the window is getting really thin for them to make another mark in the postseason. And so you kind of wonder, too, when is the last chance that Durant, LeBron, Steph might have? And maybe this is it.
And let's just pull on the Warriors strand a little bit, obviously, because they play tonight and they do involve some big names in this mix right here, Howard Beck. So you're saying, and rightfully so, Warriors think they can go on a nice run with a win tonight and see how things go. If they lose tonight, which is entirely possible, what happens when they look in the mirror? What happens next if that is what is at stake this evening against Sacramento, Howard?
So, last year, the first strand of that Warriors dynasty kind of peeled away with Bob Myers leaving the organization as the architect of the show. But you still had, of course, Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Steve Kerr. Kerr has signed on for another couple of years to extend himself to match Steph Curry's contract. Draymond's under contract. Klay, of course, is a free agent. And by all indications, Klay still wants to be there and the Warriors still want to have him there. But, there's going to have to be a negotiation and there will be teams out there that might want to throw some money at him. And Klay's had a pretty great season, all things considered. And it was a little wonky at times, but he finished pretty strong. And my suspicion, Rich, is that the Warriors will look very familiar at their core on opening night next year, regardless of how tonight goes and the next several weeks go, that we'll see that core still together. But have they seen enough from Jonathan Kuminga, from Pajemski, from Trayce Jackson-Davis? Do they have enough in that youth to feel like, well, we can just kind of keep this together and, we'll straddle the line here and the young guys will come through and we'll be right back in it? Or should they? I mean, this feels like, the same theme every year. Do they need to package some of the youth and or picks and get some immediate help? Is there any help out there available? That's always a question. And I'll just make this point, too, with the Warriors. Andrew Wiggins was absolutely phenomenal the year that they won the championship just 2 years ago. And for all of the consternation over Draymond, reasonable consternation, for all the consternation over their age at their core, all of which is valid. If Andrew Wiggins were just still the Andrew Wiggins of a couple of years ago, the Warriors might be in a very different place right now. And that's another factor the Warriors have to consider in the offseason.
Howard Beck from The Ringer here on the Rich Eisen Show. And then tonight, the winner of Lakers Pelicans, congratulations. You're in a 7-game series with the defending NBA champs. And then you've got the Thunder taking on the eventual 8 seed as well. Obviously, you're not going to try and massage your way to the 1 seed, but would you counsel something like that, Howard? Or how dangerous are the Thunder here?
I love a lot of things about the play, in Rich, and it's been absolutely a net positive, absolutely just a smash hit for the NBA. It has created these funny little side discussions like this, where there are even some hardcore Laker fans I've seen on social media suggesting very strongly that the Lakers should kind of tank their way out of the 7-8 spot by losing the first play-in game. And then I guess just assuming they will win the next game to grab the 8th seed. against either the Warriors or Kings. That's a dangerous game to play. I think that's something that only we in the media and fans would actually even consider, right? It's a, like, I don't think teams are thinking that way. Do teams sometimes mess around down the stretch of a season to arrange their seeding and to avoid certain matchups? Yes, we see that, you know, almost every year. But this is different. You know, this is, you make one mistake in the play-in or one bad turned ankle and you're done. You know, forget whether you'd rather face the Thunder or the Nuggets. You might just be, you know, facing a beach instead. So I don't think that's advisable. And I don't think the Lakers themselves are seriously considering taking out of the seventh seed to get the eighth seed.
Would you say it's also, would it, then let's ask if this is fair, that the 4-5 matchup in the West are between two teams that can absolutely win the conference and win it all, potentially, whereas the 4-5 in the East is not in that category with the Cavs and the Orlando Magic. Is that fair, Howard?
Oh, yes, that's absolutely fair. That's absolutely fair. We've gone right back to where the NBA has been for most of the last, you know, 20, 25 years, which is that the West is stacked and the East is kind of meh outside of the top. So, and look, if the Knicks were fully healthy, you know, they could make an argument. If the Sixers hadn't lost Embiid for the last couple months, and who knows? Listen, Embiid is back. And so this is one of the other fun things about the way things are set up now is with the Sixers in that seventh spot and as a play-in team, they are not your average low seed, right? Like if Embiid doesn't go down, they would have been top two or three in the Eastern Conference, almost certainly. But yeah, to your question, like Cavs Magic in the 4-5, you know, it's somebody's going to be the sacrificial lamb in the second round against the Celtics. You know, the Magic are a team on their way up, but missing some, just don't have the exact supporting cast yet, right? Like they're still building, and the Cavs are kind of wonky in places. The Clippers and Mavericks at various times this season, and you know, it doesn't take much in this league a few weeks after you see this, then you think, I'm not so sure. But both those teams at their best have looked like they absolutely can win the West and win it all. And they certainly have the requisite talent, but they've both given us reason at times to doubt them. So we'll see, but I will tell you, Rich, people around the NBA, when you ask about the Western Conference and like, who's the biggest threat to the Nuggets, the team that I've heard mentioned the most often in the last few weeks is the Mavericks.
Why?
Because Luka and Kyrie are scary as heck to opposing teams. And while this is not your prototypical super team, and they don't have necessarily an elite defense all the time, the ways in which Luka Doncic can orchestrate and get whatever shot he wants anytime he wants, and then if you are going to throw, you know, everything at him, the kitchen sink, Kyrie Irving can manufacture anything out of thin air at any time as well. And I think there were reasonable doubts. I had them myself about whether those two would play off each other well, whether they would figure out just the overall chemistry, because they're both so ball dominant. But Kyrie Irving, I think for the first time since he left LeBron all those years ago, has found a way to absolutely thrive and play at his best, and has conducted himself well off the court as well since arriving in Dallas, that he's become that ideal number two. And I wasn't sure. I didn't know what a good number two for Luka could even be, given how ball dominant he is, given his usage rate. But they have found a really nice kind of arrangement there between these two. And then you've got, you know, the Daniel Gaffords and the Derek Livelys and the PJ Washingtons and guys who just, you know, whether they defend or whether they are vertical threats, they just fit in nicely around them. So it's not a team that's stocked with talent, but Rich, nobody really in today's NBA is super stocked with talent. This is not, we're past the era of super teams. The Clippers have kind of the facade of one. The Suns have tried to do that, but Bradley Beal's not really in that category anymore. The Celtics are absolutely stacked in just terms of having really great talent 1 through 6, but it's not like the old Heat teams of LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. It's not the Warriors of prime Steph, Clay, and Kevin Durant. So if you just have two absolutely elite scorer playmaker types like the Mavericks do, and a really orchestrated cast around them as they have created, you've got a shot. Because most teams that have won the title in the last several years are really just one supreme player, one superstar, and a great ensemble around him. And that's kind of what the Mavericks look like.
So, Howard Beck of the Ringer here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's your reporting on Giannis's health?
I can't say that I have any insights on it myself, Rich. You know, the rumblings have been that he's probably missing at least the start of the playoffs, which is not surprising given what the injury was. It looked much worse when he went down, right? Like, that was one of those where it's like, oh, non-contact, lower leg. Is this going to be an Achilles? You know, thank God it isn't. But you don't want to mess around with you know, what are they calling it, a calf strain, whatever it is. It's unfortunate. The Bucks have already had a really rough season. And I thought they looked vulnerable going in, even if Giannis was at full strength. If they're missing him for a game or two, I mean, they very quickly could lose home court advantage. And that's a really fun, scrappy Pacers team that's, you know, hungry to make some noise in the playoffs and certainly made a lot of noise against the Bucks in the regular season, including Ballgate or whatever we're calling that game. So I think the Bucks are very much in danger of losing the first round for a second straight season here.
Yeah, I mean, they could at least use Giannis's absence, hopefully before his return, to figure out if he returns and has a big night, who's in charge of the commemorative basketball. Like, we could at least use those first couple of games of this series to get that all settled, Howard. We can only hope for that. But is there any truth to some of the rumblings you hear or one hears that the concept of Lillard's long-term stay in Milwaukee is in the balance of what happens with the Bucks in these playoffs, Howard? What do you, is there any truth to those rumors that are out there?
Well, yeah, listen, only Damian Lillard at the end of the day can tell you that, but have there been indications over the course of the season that maybe he wasn't thrilled, you know, with life in Milwaukee or with the basketball in Milwaukee? I mean, it's been a tough season for all of them, clearly. And it wasn't where Damian Lillard set out to be. We all remember all last summer, it was Miami or bust, and it didn't go that way. And that's life in the NBA. That's how trades go sometimes. But it's questionable whether the Bucks have gotten what they wanted out of this deal too. So if they lose in the first round, all things are on the table. And this is like, I'm not saying this to be dramatic or hyperbolic, Rich. I've covered the league a long time, and especially in the last 5 to 10 years, if there's one thing that should be clear to all of us, it's that nothing is forever in this league. Things change very quickly. And when you combine high expectations with early flameouts, anything is possible. Coaches get fired, front offices get fired, superstars ask out. The Bucks already for the last few years, you could see it, right? They were the roster was aging. The group that won the championship in 21 was starting to fray a little bit. They were having difficulty just because of the way the NBA system is set up. They were having difficulty replenishing as they went, and they made a swing for the fences move. And I don't blame them. I think most people believed at the time that they swapped out Jrue Holiday for Damian Lillard that this was a logical move. Sure, it was going to hurt them defensively, but man, Dame and Giannis combined, the firepower there alone should make up for whatever you lost defensively. It hasn't really been the case. And then they had to change coaches mid-season. And it's just been a really rough go. I know Giannis signed his extension last fall, right before the season. Lillard's under contract. But if you lose in the first round, and again, given all just the awkwardness of their season, I think everything is on the table.
Howard Beck here on the Rich Eisen Show. Any chance we see a ton of MVP votes for Jalen Brunson? I think he deserves it, Howard. I think he totally deserves it. What do you think?
Is the question whether? Yeah, I mean, the question is the question whether he gets a lot of is on a lot of ballots somewhere in the 1 through 5? Or are you asking does he actually get some number ones?
Number ones, and I understand shiny objects get covered and shiny objects in New York get revered, and sometimes there's a bias towards it, but straight up, man. I mean, this team banged up. They get OG Anunoby. He hardly plays. Julius Randle's gone. This is a team that, you know, famously Kenny Smith from Lefrak City, too. You know, not that should mean that it should should have anything to do with his analysis, but he's like, the Knicks never have the best player on the court. And you could make the case he was the best player in the Eastern Conference the last 2 months. They're a 50-win, two-seed team, and the reason why has to be because of what Brunson did and put the team on his shoulders and got it done.
Jalen Brunson's been absolutely incredible. And if you had asked anybody around the NBA 2-3 months ago, certainly going back to the start of the season, whether Jalen Brunson would be in an MVP conversation and all NBA, one of the top all NBA spots, I think people would have said, you know, he's really good, but yeah, calm down. You're getting ahead of yourself. But if you watch the season Jalen Brunson just had, holy moly, everything you just said, Rich, he's been absolutely incredible. He will be on my MVP ballot, but he will not be at the top of my MVP ballot. And I think that the race, as it has shaped up over the course of the season, between Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Luka, I think that that group, the cases for them are just stronger. Mm. And I say that versus Brunson. I say that versus Giannis. I'd say that versus Tatum or anybody else, Anthony Edwards. There are always a lot of guys who are really worthy of being in the quote-unquote conversation. But it's a five-person ballot. Obviously, it's weighted, and you know, you adjust as you go. And to me, the definition of MVP is some version of outstanding individual season on an outstanding team, a team that is a plausible contender for the title. And you know, you kind of adjust that as you go. And every year, the field's a little bit different too. But there is nothing in Jokic's case, individually or team-wise, that would suggest that he shouldn't be one of the top three spots. And on my ballot, probably number one. We have to file those in, let's see, 4.5 hours.
Here. Oh, boy.
Less than 4.5 hours.
Okay.
So there's still time to talk me out of it.
Well, but, I'm trying to talk you into Brunson. You know, I'm coming from it with a hint of bias, but truly, what he has done and what he's turned himself into and what he continues to get better. I can't wait to see what he does in these playoffs. Certainly if they take on the Sixers to start a good old fashioned, you know, Amtrak series here, man, like that, that would particularly, interest me.
That would be a blast. Knicks Sixers would be a blast. And just obviously, you know, very different, you know, when one team built around Joel Embiid, an absolute giant, literally, figuratively and otherwise, versus a team built around Brunson. I mean, listen, the playoffs will obviously have no bearing because the ballots will be in by then. The MVP thing is funny, Rich, just because everybody comes to it with their own sensibility and their own definition of what it is. And if you want to say what's the most impressive feat this season by one player, you could say that the most impressive thing done was Jalen Brunson getting the Knicks to 50 wins and the two spot in the East. And I wouldn't probably argue the point, but MVP brings in a lot of different elements. And it is, to an extent, a team award as well, in the sense that the vast majority of MVPs over the last 35 years, there have been a couple of exceptions, have been great players who had absolutely outstanding seasons, packed the box score every night, and were on outstanding teams, teams that were among the favorites to win the title. I think that, could the Knicks make a run? Yes. Do I expect that? No, because of all the injuries that they've gotten, and without Randall, they don't really have a clear second option. That's not Brunson's fault, but again, MVP has always combined elements of both individual and team success. So, if anybody wants to make the argument for Brunson up top, I'd listen to it, and I think there is a compelling case. But you have to explain why you would put him over Jokic, why you'd put him over Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Luka Doncic. And I think that's a really tough bar to clear for anybody.
Before I let you go, Howard, how over the moon is the NBA about the WNBA draft and the stars that are entering it from the women's college game and whatever you might be hearing, how the NBA can continue to raise the profile of this league?
Not a conversation I've had with anybody at the league office recently, Rich, but I will just say, you know, David Stern, the late David Stern, put everything he had personally, professionally, spiritually, even you could say, into getting the WNBA going all those years ago. And there are many others along the way who are really important in this. And I don't want to just, you know, give him undue credit. But it hasn't always been easy, I think, for the NBA and the WNBA financially, just the level of fan engagement, and obviously some lean years and ownership changes and franchise changes. And now here we are in this position where women's basketball is absolutely, whether at the college level or the professional level, they are holding their own. And the star power is there. The excitement is there. The fan engagement is there. I don't actually have to have a conversation with Adam Silver to know the answer. I'm sure he's absolutely thrilled with the level of interest and popularity, the surge that is happening with this league. This feels like a real moment for the women's game. And again, at both the college and the WNBA level. And, you know, I was watching social media light up last night mm-hmm. with the WNBA draft and all the commentary. That's not something I don't think we would have seen 10 years ago.
Agreed. Thanks for the time, Howard. Enjoy the playoffs. We'll check back in with you as we matriculate. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
You got it. At Howard Beck. Follow him and check out everything he's got to write about the NBA playoffs that begin in earnest with the play-in tournament tonight. Boom. You know what we'll do? Yeah, what I'd like to do, top of the next hour, let's start wondering about who's lasting longer in the NBA playoffs. Like, who lasts longer? And obviously, if you choose a team in the 9-10 game tonight or tomorrow, you're being you're going out on a limb.
Being bold.
Because they're the first ones that could be eliminated. We'll do that because I am fascinated. That Mavs-Clippers series is fascinating.
It is.
Knicks-Sixers would be outstanding.
We got to get there first, though.
Knicks-Sixers would be outstanding. Or Knicks-Heat. Old school. Let's get Van Gundy out there around somebody's ankle. Let's roll.
As long as it's not Sixers-Celtics in the first round, I'm good with that.
Sixers and Celtics.
I don't want that not round one.
Well, for that happens, you have to lose and then win.
Lose and, yeah.
Yeah, lose, then win. Yep.
Lose, then win. Which is what he's counseling the Lakers do to get themselves to the Thunder. Right. I don't know, man. You're. It's a tough one either way. We'll take a break. When we come back, a top five that's near and dear to my heart. After that commercial break, it will be high. It will be far. It will be gone. Let's talk Sleep Number, people. We all know quality sleep is essential. I'm just not myself when I don't get a good night's sleep. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. For instance, my side of the bed, my Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's side of the bed, her Sleep Number setting is 70. Two different numbers, same bed, but we get the same great sleep. So, make sure you get your Sleep Number bed right now because you will absolutely love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you can save up to $800 on select Sleep Number smart beds for a limited time. That's right, $800. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Check it out. Sleep Number. You won't regret it.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
In this day and age, though, I've had a conversation with fellow Hall of Famer John Smoltz a couple weeks ago, Reggie, that kids don't mind striking out as much these days. Did you have an all or nothing mentality? Obviously, we all know how many strikeouts you had in your career, but did that matter at all to you? Because there's a lot of hand wringing over it today these days.
Well, I think I struck out too much. And I averaged somewhere 2,500 in 21 years is 125 a year. But that's too many. And I think for 162 games, if I would have played them, I'd have averaged 140 something. Mm-hmm. That's too many strikeouts. You can get by with it. Wow. Hold on. Let me take this call from Hal Steinbrenner. I'll call him right back.
Okay, you go.
Hey, Hal, I'll call you right back. It's Reggie. Okay, thanks.
Reg, I mean, seriously, you could take that. I mean, you could put me on hold for the boss. That's okay.
I can't have you hear what I'm saying.
Now, hold on a second, Reggie. Okay. Now, hold on. Real quick, though. I would not be doing my job if I didn't ask this question. If that was George back in the day, would you have been able to tell him?
No.
What you just told his son?
No, I'd have hung up on you. I might not even have told you. I just acted like I wasn't on the phone. I'd have hung up.
Oh, man.
Now, if that was Hank, I'd have probably got off the phone because he'd have had some choice words for me, too.
Oh, gosh. One of the many times Reggie's been on this program.
So funny.
Seek out when he was here in studio as well on our YouTube feed. That's for sure. All right, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Listen, local sports announcers are not the cups of tea for a lot of folks nationally or for the rivals of the local team. For instance, Chris, I grew up despising Johnny Most. The voice of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, he had a great voice.
Yeah, I know, right?
Underneath the DJ.
I couldn't handle him. But I imagine you had you been, alive for much of it.
Yeah.
You would have been great. Exactly.
I love the guy.
Exactly, because they root for the home team.
Yeah. Like Tommy Heinsohn.
They can get on the home team too, though.
Yeah.
But they also have a certain style that makes you feel good inside because you grew up listening to them. Right. The big moments of your team, they've delivered for you, and you have a connection to them. And that's the way I felt for many times, many a moon, about John Sterling, the voice of the New York Yankees, who surprised a whole bunch of folks by announcing out of the blue he's done. After 36 years in the booth, he's finished. He's called his last game. He's retiring immediately. And on Saturday, he's going to be honored at the stadium. Now, my first thought is, oh, God, I hope he's okay and healthy. And I started reaching out to people. And they're like, he's fine. He just doesn't really want to do it anymore. And I called him today. I got his number through Michael Kay because Susie and I want to send our best to him. Because when the Yankees were winning all those World Series and Susie was covering them and I was covering them for separate entities in the late 90s and the early aughts, he couldn't have been nicer to Susie and he couldn't have been nicer to me. And we love him. We got to know him a little bit personally. And we wanted to say, hey, congrats. And so we got his number. I spoke to him today, invited him on. He's going to come on tomorrow. He sounds great.
Oh, nice.
He sounds great. And he's been calling games since 1960 professionally. He spent 9 years in Atlanta calling Braves and Hawks games. But folks of the Nets and the Islanders know him from his WMCA days in New York City. Yeah. And then, of course, calling Yankees games since 1989. Put up this tweet that hit my timeline yesterday. Ryan Spader put this on Twitter yesterday, and I assume he's correct. Sterling's called 29.5% of all Yankee games ever and includes almost 50% of New York's postseason games and 100% of Derek Jeter's plate appearances.
Wow.
Okay. So in that respect, I've got a top five to say thank you to John Sterling. Hit it.
High five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rich's top five.
My top five John Sterling calls. And here we go. Number five.
I need to cover my ears.
No. Yeah. These are great moments. I mean, maybe not for you as a Red Sox fan, but these are great. These are moments in baseball history. May 17th, 1998, against the Minnesota Twins. The Yankees, at that point in time, had only one perfect game ever. It was Don Larsen in the World Series, and then David Wells took the mound that day.
Bernie Williams plays a step around to left. The 0-1. Swung on. He's going to get it. Popped up to right field. O'Neill near the line. He makes the catch. David Wells. David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up. 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Of course, that's his famous call, the Yankees win, which is what a lot of folks from other parts of the country didn't really get into. I did. I loved it. Number four on the list, it was the 2001 American League Championship Series against the 116-win Seattle Mariners. Yankees took the first two games in Seattle. The Seattle Mariners took game three decisively in Yankee Stadium. It's game four. Brett Boone, it hit a home run in the top of the eighth inning in a scoreless game, and these Yankees were staring a 2-2 series right in the face when Bernie Williams stepped to the plate with one out in the eighth.
One out, no one on, bottom of the eighth, 1-0 Seattle. It'll be a 3-2. Swung on and hit high in the air to deep right. That ball is high, it is far, it is gone! Bernie goes boom! He drills a home run the short way in the right field seats. Burn, baby, burn! And the Yankees tie the ball game at one.
Burn, baby, burn. And of course, that's his home run call. It is high, it is far, it is gone. I believe the Angels announcer did one of those last night in honor of Sterling Mike Trout went yard last night. Number three, the Yankees made the World Series that year. As we all know, it was a very emotional year for New York City, 2001. Game four of the World Series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Arizona was up 2-1, up two runs in the eighth inning. They pitched Curt Schilling on short rest. Remember that? He went seven innings, and then they try to get a two-inning save from Byung-Hun Kim. Mm. He struck out the Yankees, struck out the side in order in the eighth, and then Paul O'Neill with a one-out hit in the ninth. Down in this game by two runs, 3-1. That's when, with two outs and one on, Tino Martinez stepped to the plate in the bottom of the ninth.
There's Tino, one on, two out, pitch is swung on and drilled to deep right center, it is high, it is far, it is gone! The Bam Tino with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, he drills a game-tying two-run home run. Oh, the Bam Tino delivers big time, and the Yankees on the precipice of defeat tie the game at three.
And they went to extras. That was when Jeter became the first Mr. November. They won that game, and they tied the series at two apiece. And then in game five, Miguel Bautista had 7 2/3 of scoreless baseball. He outdueled Mike Mussina, led 2-0 in the ninth inning. Jorge Posada led off against brought Byung-Hun Kim out for another save. Unreal. And then Scott Brosius steps to the plate with two outs in this one in the ninth.
Two-run home run by Scott Brosius. Michael said, do you believe in miracles? 56,000 Yankee fans here say, yes, we do.
I mean, what a big night. And then number one is history. On October 4th, 2022, with 61 home runs, trying to set the American League record for home runs in a season, Aaron Judge stepped to the plate in Toronto, and John was at the mic.
Here's the 1-1. Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record. Aaron Judge hits his 62nd. All the Yankees out of the dugout to greet him. Just think of it. Three Yankee right fielders. The Babe hitting 60 and 27. The Jolly Roger hitting 61 and 61. And now Aaron Judge hits his 62nd home run, the most home runs any American leaguer has hit in a single season. And the American League has been alive for 120 years. This is Judgment Day. Case closed.
I love it. Case closed indeed. Thank you, John Sterling. I love you, man. And I've got one more.
You think we need one more?
There we go.
All right, we'll get one more.
And I know this is the thing that you found most hokey, Chris, and his turns of the phrases on home runs. Gleyber Day, the Jambino for Jason Giambi, the A-bomb for A-Rods. It's Stantonian Blast. By the way, his last home run call was Stanton's Grand Slam last week. Yep. Text message for Teixeira. Robbie Cano, don't you know? This is my favorite one. July 24th, 2018. Masahiro Tanaka throws a shutout against the Rays.
The pitch to Duffy is grounded to short. Didi fields and throws to first in time. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Masahiro Tanaka pitches a complete game shutout and a beauty, giving up only three hits, one walk, and striking out nine. The sun will come out. Tanaka.
Oh, gosh.
Bet your bottom dollar with Tanaka. The sun will shine.
Wow.
I do not like that, man. I do not appreciate
Come
that.
Come on.
That is so good.
Come on.
You got to
Come
like, on. You got to appreciate
the
that.
The sun will come out.
The sun will come out.
Tanaka. Come on.
I mean, Del Tufo, that should be your ringtone.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, John Sterling, for all the memorable calls and the smiles and the laughs and the memories and... Enjoy your retirement, sir. That'll wrap it up for hour two.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.